Call the MTC Planning Committee and the ABAG Administrative Committee to order. And Mark, if you can call your Administrative Committee to order.
We'll call it to order. I don't believe we've got a quorum, so.
Okay, well, hopefully as we go along, we'll pick up members. And Janice, do we have a quorum for the MTC Planning? Okay. We've got the meeting compensation. Each member of the board here today is entitled to receive $100 per meeting, up to a maximum of $500. Just for those of you that are here, MTC is one of the only agencies that put sunshine on this issue, and so which is something that should be commended. So with that, for MTC Planning Committee members, we have the consent counter. These are items from the minutes from the November 9th meeting.
I would move for adoption.
We have a motion and a second.
Second.
Sam, thank you.
Sorry.
If there's no dissent, that motion passes unanimously.
You should know. Sparing's in charge. Starts at 9:30.
Okay, moving on to item number four. Marion, or who's going to present this item? Ken, are you kicking it off? Or
is Marion? Miriam Sheehan from ABAG is going to be presenting this item. We can switch the items if you prefer, and we can go with the next item and come back to this one.
Okay. All right.
Ellen, you want to go ahead?
Ellen, are you ready to
Thank you.
Start off? Okay. We're going to move to item number five. This is the Plan Bay Area Public Outreach Update. And that, Ellen Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ellen Griffin from MTC's Legislation and Public Affairs staff. I wanted to give you a big picture today about the final phase of Plan Bay Area Outreach that will come with the release of the draft plan in March. We're going to share some comments that we've already heard about this from MTC's Policy Advisory Council and ABAG's Regional Planning Committee. But first, I just wanted to talk, overall, the goal is to provide multiple and varied ways for Bay Area residents to engage on the draft plan. In a moment, I was going to cover the format for the public hearings, but I also wanted to stress and call to your attention that people will have many different ways to comment that go well beyond just coming to a meeting. We recognize that people are busy and that meetings are just one way. We plan to do another poll, a telephone survey of Bay Area residents. We are going to have a new online comment feature, much beefed up from the last time. We're going to be using an open town hall format so people can comment and then also see what other people are saying in an open platform. We're going to post all the comments we get on the OneBayArea.org website, which we have redesigned recently to streamline it and make it a little more intuitive for the user. We will continue our outreach process with community-based organizations in low-income communities. And we're also hoping to tap into a lot of electronic newsletters that get sent out, and we're hoping that maybe some of our board members would actually help us. If you have an e-newsletter, if you could help us publicize the meeting that's coming up in your particular county. We'll be putting flyers in the newspapers, and we'll do mailings and email blasts talking about all the different ways to comment. Sort of in another category are meetings that are required under SB 375 for elected officials. We'll be doing that as specified under the statute, working with the clerks of the boards in all the local jurisdictions to notice those meetings for the public. And we'll be working with county congestion management agencies to agendize those. We also have public hearings on the EIR as required under the California Environmental Quality Act and those are focused pretty narrowly on environmental impacts associated with Plan Bay Area. But I wanted to stress that people can comment on the EIR at the public workshops, which I'm going to get to now. So we are planning one in each county. We're looking for large venues that will give us a lot of flexibility in the seating and format. We're looking at a late afternoon, early evening time frame that's flexible for people if they want to just pop in on their way home from work, or if they want to come and attend for a whole evening, they have that option. It'll be a two-part format, and the first part will be an open house to orient people to the draft plan. That's their chance to come, learn, look at the visuals, learn some of the key points in the plan, ask questions. There'll be a prominent Q&A element to the open house. And then during this time, too, if people just want to comment there, we're going to have a comment station. They can give oral comments. They can submit written comments. We'll treat them all the same. And it's just really to provide many, many ways and flexibility for people to get comments in. The second portion of the meeting is a traditional public hearing, and it's just designed to hear comments. We're not planning to do any discussions, facilitation, or anything of that nature. It's just sort of an old-fashioned public hearing to let people, you know, speak their mind. We will be contacting my colleague at ABAG, and I will be contacting the board members on the ABAG Executive Board as well as MTC commissioners to see what role you want to have at the meetings in your county, and we'll work with you on that. We're hoping that you'll want to take an active role. And I wanted to thank you all again for, you know, the many hours you've already contributed in this effort. Let's see, the MTC's Policy Advisory Council heard a presentation on this earlier in this week, and I just wanted to share some of their comments. They liked the many ways that people can comment on the draft plan. They especially liked the telephone poll, as that would tap a really wide audience. They encouraged more web-based options, even possibly expanding our online comment tool to sort of mirror the public workshop more. They liked the open comment booth that would allow people to comment at any time during the evening. And they also wanted staff to be aware that they should be prepared to assist people with disabilities, either at the meeting, just getting around, because they can be very crowded situations at times, and also, you know, think ahead and prepare our materials in accessible formats, which we will do. The ABAG Regional Planning Committee had a presentation. I know many of you were at that meeting, so I won't go into a lot of detail, but we did hear that a lot of board members really want to have a direct role in the public comment portion of the meeting rather than using an administrative law judge or something of that nature. So we've heard that, but we'll work with each county set of elected officials to see, you know, what works best in that particular county. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Julie?
First, let me say I'm very glad you heard what we had to say at the Regional Planning Committee, because I think Chair Spearing and I can confirm that we were pretty vehement that this is our responsibility to represent this, and bringing in someone who has no context for what we're talking about is not going to be effective. If we're going to be working on this, we have to own this, and we have to be open to our public to hear what's going on, and we need to be the ones there to run those meetings. So I think that's really important. One of the concerns I have that I don't think we touched on as much at the RPC was last time we had a lot of complaints that people's questions were not answered in a timely manner. They posted comments, they sent questions, and they were not responded to at all or incompletely. And I'm wondering if there's a way that with all the information we're going to put up ahead of time, we can do something like we do, although not strictly, like we do when we respond to comments for an EIR, where we say, see this section, this answers your question, or elaborate on clarifying the explanation as quickly as possible, because other people then can learn from those answers and avoid some of that frustration, I think, that built up last time. That, I think, was part of our biggest problem, is that people did not feel like they were even being heard as they asked questions. And so if we can have staff be very careful to try and respond in a timely manner, days, not weeks, to those questions, I think that would be very, very helpful to the process.
No, I concur. I think we have to be very careful that we're not ignoring the questions. I think it's very important that we respond and there is an answer. You know, it's one thing to say we didn't hear you. It's another when we say we disagree on this. And so, thank you for those comments.
Mr. Chairman, may the record show we have a quorum at this
point. Okay. Record show that we now have a quorum of both the ABAG Administrative Committee and the MTC Planning Committee. If there's no further questions, I'm going to go ahead and take public testimony. I have several cards. And do you have a timer? So when you hear that the timer, do you hear a sound at the end?
Yes.
Okay, when you hear that sound, please just wrap up your comments, if you would, please. And Christopher, Pariah?
Pariah.
Oh, Pariah. Christopher, come on up. I wasn't quite sure. At the end there.
And so we have how much time?
Three minutes.
3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, my name is Christopher Pareja, and I'd like to thank the previous speaker for some of the acknowledgments she made of process that we think will make the input from the public better heard. And I also would like to thank Julie and Jim for mirroring that that sentiment. We are very concerned as citizens that the meetings be held in the evening in all 9 Bay Area counties so that it's more accessible for people who are working and want to provide input. We would like to see for people who are not able to make the meetings in person the ability for televised coverage, and then if possible local radio news outlets as well covering the hearings or the approval sessions. We do have some concerns in the last visioning sessions that were held that there were stakeholders in the room that were voting as if they were concerned citizens, and we think that they should be identified in the future and not be allowed to vote on multiple occasions in the rooms where the visioning took place. Additionally, we would like to be able to see more input, not just from the speakers or the presenters and the proponents of the bill. We'd like to be able to see some opposing feedback in a more structured format, such as a panel discussing issues such as places where smart growth concepts have not worked effectively in the past, or the safety issues involved in high-density mass transit-oriented areas, so that people have the ability to make an informed decision. And we also would like to have a better understanding, or have the citizens have a better understanding, of the ethics ramifications of limiting funds to people who don't participate in ABAG, or who, for cities or counties who don't necessarily favor the plan, and if they don't comply, if those funds can be lost. We want the citizens to know that that's one of the tactics being used to generate compliance. We were concerned on the letter on the 7th that was issued that said public comment would be limited to 2 hours per county. We don't know that that's necessarily enough. If it is, great. If not, an arbitrarily chosen time limit really does limit the ability for meaningful input from the public, and we think that that's not necessarily a good idea. We're also concerned about the surveys that are being conducted by phone. We want to make sure that the questions that are being answered are framed in a way that it's genuine about what the ramifications of the plan will be, and give some specific detail for people to make an informed decision. There are some concerns we have that there's continual outreach to community-based organizations based on race and economic status, and we think that that's a discriminatory practice. We think that there should be a broader base of input allowed. Okay. Sounds like I'm out of time. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Good comments. Don Paul. Don?
My name is Don Ball. I'm a member of the city of Mountain View. That my concern is that we really feel discriminated against. That as we come to these meetings, as I go to the city council meetings, as I attend the planning commission meetings, that it's a foregone conclusion that no matter what we say as citizens, it isn't going to make any difference. I'll give you an example, that we had a plastic bag ban adopted in Mountain View, which was part of the San Mateo County plan and Santa Clara County plan. We attended numerous hearings, and in the end, it didn't make any difference at all what we said. Now, that's, you know, the voice of a minority, and I understand that. But that also we're seeing that in our general plan, that it didn't make any difference as to what the public was saying about the general plan, because we were told that, well, there are certain guidelines that have to be met in order to get certain amounts of money from MTC, and that it really didn't make too much difference, that it was already a foregone conclusion what our general plan was going to look like. Well, it turns out to be not our general plan. It turns out to be a regional general plan, and that we just really feel disenfranchised. I appreciate all the time that you put into these things, but in the end result, it doesn't make any difference anymore. It'll make any difference today that we're speaking here. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Heather, Gus? Heather?
Yeah, I don't know what else I could say to make you understand how upset the public is at what's going on. This is not a left or right issue. This is a right or wrong issue, and this is wrong for the Bay Area. This has been going on way before SB 375 was legislated. This has been going on for years, and the public is just now figuring this out, and we have not been given a fair chance to comment. We've been given the chance to comment. We just haven't gotten any answers. Over 2 years, we've been coming to these meetings. We've been going to your workshops. We've been playing your card games and little chips. And we've been divided. We've been marginalized. We've been shut down. We've been attacked by your own staffers, Ellen Griffin over here, who is still here. And nothing is done about it. We still don't have the answers to our questions that we were promised by Scott Hagerty after the January meetings. They are simply posted as questions from all 9 Bay Area counties on the website with no answers. This is unacceptable. The taxpayers need to know what's happening, and I intend to inform them through Citizens Town Hall. I will be offering town halls all over the Bay Area for anybody that wants them through citizenstownhall.org, because apparently this board has no intention of informing the public of what's really going on and giving them a chance to speak. And having judges and mediators and paid people to babysit the public and make it appear as if we have a voice when we don't is an embarrassment. And Julie's right. It's time to own it. You want to sell us this crap? Then own it. Because ultimately, we're going to be looking you in the eye when you vote for this, and you're going to be stuck with it. And we're going to continue to come back and remind you of that. And we are going to let the public know who's responsible for ruining the Bay Area and the charm of all the communities.
Thank you, Heather. Roger Haynes. Roger?
Mr. Perea said it so eloquently, I don't think I can add to what he said. I'd just like to reinforce that that's the feeling of the community, the people that I know. The visioning sessions we thought was an absolute farce. They were stacked with contractors and employees of the government. They were not filled by the public, and to then present the results as being a public survey is ludicrous. The telephone survey, I understand, is very biased in the way it's asking the questions. So again, I'd ask you to look at the wording and make it an even playing field. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Is it Sarah Whitney or... I'm sorry, I couldn't read your first name.
So yes, hello. My name
yourself.
Is Searle.
Searle, okay. I'm
Searle
sorry, sir.
Whitney.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm with a group called PlanBayAreaMyth.org. And we've put up an online petition, and I don't quite know if this is an appropriate venue, but I'd like to read it and offer you 176 signatures from...
Well, you got a couple minutes, so use
many counties
wisely.
Around the bay.
Use
we,
wisely.
The undersigned citizens and registered voters of the nine Bay Area counties, respectfully request a suspension of Plan Bay Area / One Bay Area until a more thorough disclosure of the methodologies used in determining the jobs, housing, and carbon emissions data is made available. We find unacceptable the overall lack of transparency of funders, use of taxpayer dollars in promotion of this project, lack of significant public input, as so many have spoken to here, and potential exploitation of loopholes in current law, including but not limited to undermining the goals, protections, and intent of CEQA and AB 32, billions of dollars in federal and regional funding used as incentive for real estate development, exemption of developers from appropriate review under CEQA, per capita measurement of carbon emissions reductions instead of regional measurements, zoning authority given to a nine-county panel rather than city councils and local elected officials, and new developments pushed into low-income communities without affordable housing guarantees. Is there somebody willing to receive this petition?
Yeah, you can just give it to our clerk right there. And we'll
thank you.
We'll add it in our records. Thank you, sir. Jennifer Delaney? Jennifer? Jennifer, is that the... right, last name.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Delaney. A closer look at sustainable city. Lessons learned from central planning that does not work. Portland, Oregon, was considered a model for the 21st century urban sustainable development planning with integrated land use and short rail transit systems. However, the reality is that it has all resulted in a great reduction of Portland's livability, and the disgruntled people are moving away by the thousands. To summarize, Portland urban growth boundary would not allow for any building out, only up, and thus increase the city's population density. The transportation funds were not spent on improving roads, but only on the region's rail transit system and bicycle paths. Normal housing was made unaffordable so that the city planners could force people to move to the high-density, mixed-use family housing in the crowded homes with tiny lots. Roads were made narrower with little room for cars to increase the incentive to ride bikes or use the region's expensive rail transit system. The results. The Portland utopia has become a nightmare. The skyrocketing costs of Portland's sustainable planning far outweigh any benefits. Billions of dollars were diverted from school, police, and fire protection, public health facilities, and other essential services to subsidize the construction of transit and high-density housing projects. Scores of high-density mixed-use housing developments are standing empty. The amount of people using the transit system is less than what is back in the 1980s. Tens of thousands of people are moving to other cities, such as Vancouver, Washington, where they still have the freedom to buy the kind of homes they would like to buy and roadways upon which to drive cars and money. Cars and money is still being spent to take care of roads, schools, police, and fire, and other essential services. All this sustainability has made Portland such a strange, weird place that there is even a TV sitcom now called Portlandia that helps much that heaps much laughter and ridicule on the city and the extreme green kind of people it attracts. Central planning versus the free enterprise system. Such an outcome as what has happened in Portland is predictable when a few people are given enormous central power over an entire urban area without the knowledge or a vote of the people. Other cities that want to maintain their livability would do well to study Portland and not allow this example. Thank you.
James, did you want to speak on this item?
Yes.
Okay, I had four on it, but you're up. Thank you.
You know, you wouldn't need to be particularly bright or some kind of sociologist to understand that these meetings do not enjoy public support. A blind man could literally see that. Despite your efforts to socially engineer and bring these meetings to a predetermined conclusion employing the Delphi technique, which is designed to do exactly that, anyone could see that these meetings have not enjoyed public support. To have 800 people make the decision for 8 million is absolute tyranny. You're employing three different instruments that oppressors use, two of which define a Soviet model of governance, one of which is the empowerment of unelected boards and commissions that are NGOs, that is to say, non-governmental organizations. The other is regionalism, which by design disenfranchises the people. And the third is one that other crime families, like the ones that you've aligned yourself with, employ as well, being extortion and bribery. So after orchestrating the impoverishment of these different cities, you bribe them with our money to oppress us. You know, students study, painters paint, oppressors oppress. It pains me to look at my fellow Americans and suggest that when you look in the mirror, you are looking at an oppressor. All of this is flawed. There's a couple of components of it that are unconstitutional. This is not pursuant to the liberty and the pursuit of happiness of the 8 million citizens. I say 8 because there's another million that are peripheral, living out in rural country life, which is their American dream, which will be decimated by this plan. As we will soon learn, this whole house of cards and this market is confidence. And even before anything tangible has been done, the confidence in speculating and loaning on and investing in business outside this tiny transportation corridor, PDA, which you've taken the liberty, literally, of identifying, the confidence in these outlying areas will be decimated. Who would want to speculate? Who would want to loan on it? But then again, that's the whole idea. Because the people you've aligned yourself with don't want to do some remodeling.
Okay, thank you, James.
They want a whole new structure. So if you ask any construction guy, he'll tell you there's demo involved. Unfortunately, what we're witnessing right now
is the demolition of everything we hold dear.
Thank you,
Jen.
Orlean Cole. Orlean.
My name is Orlean Krilla, and I'm from Santa Rosa. You have given us some interesting aspects of how maybe we can get more people to be aware of this. The best way to get everyone aware is to put this up for a vote. Every Californian should be aware of these plans for their future, for their property, for their rights. And to do this in this tiny little arena, maybe with whatever aspect you have to try to get the word out, is not fair to all of us. So I plead for us to please put this up for a vote. If you think this is so wonderful, then people will vote for it. But I think it is being done by stealth behind the scenes, and most people are not even aware it's going on. Who is really behind this whole vision? The Metropolitan Transportation Commission, ABAG, Association of Bay Area Governments, City Councils, County Board of Supervisors, NGOs, non-governmental organizations such as Greenbelt Alliance, League of Women Voters, Transform California, Silicon Valley Foundation, MetroQuest, Calthorpe Associates, Knights Foundation, and bicycle coalitions. Many of these groups belong to a large umbrella group called ICLEI, International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, now disguised as Local Government for Sustainability, which is driving the same green sustainable policies and transformations around the nation and the world. Around $200 billion in federal grants will be divided up between the 9 counties around the Bay Area to promote and implement their One Bay vision. If all goes according to plan, what will all that money be used for? To build high-density, low-income, stacked and packed mixed-use housing with living areas above and shops underneath, with little space for backyards, few spaces for parking lot, very narrow roads, and lots of bicycle trails. And nobody likes to live in such areas, as you heard from Jennifer. Portland, Oregon is a great example. People don't like that. It takes away their livability. To build mass transit systems so the dense stack and pack housing will be located next to buses or short rail systems, even though there is less than 5% of all Californians currently using mass transit. Rural land will be rezoned, making what it was once used for no longer possible. Roads will not be repaired, more high fees and regulations will be imposed. This will eventually force people off their rural lands and herd them into the cities to be stacked and packed in human settlement zones. Rural lands will be turned into protected open space or green belts. To further seal the social justice plan, which is redistribution of wealth, taking from those who have and giving to those who have not, or to whomever, it is no longer equal justice under the law, but social justice for a selected class. And this is also going to be affecting our public schools. I've just finished writing a book how it's going to be taking from the suburbs and the suburb schools and giving to the inner city schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Bernie Matheson. After Bernie is Charles Cagnon.
It's Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E.
Oh,
it's an Irish name. Okay. What got me to come here was when I heard about the proposed vehicle per mile tax, that concept, when you'd have a tracker in your car. Hello? You know, has anybody read 1984, George Orwell's famous book? I mean, this is just what it sounds like. Traffic increases due to multiple households, members. It's increased because of multiple household members go to work. Parents need a car. They drop off the kids. They drop off the laundry on the way home. They pick up the groceries, the kids, and the shirts from the laundry. They're going to do that on a bus? Well, you know, you might be able to do that in Scandinavia, where I did actually live for a few years with my husband. And there, on the bus, the driver would get out of the seat and help the mom on the bus with her kids and put her packages away. Lots of luck here, because if anybody fell or tripped, there would be a huge insurance lawsuit that would drag on forever in the courts. I mean, can you imagine that happening here? Central planning, I've seen it in the business we're engaged in. Been to China a lot. They've overbuilt high-density housing. There's more buildings standing empty right now than there are occupied. You go in these tall buildings in Shanghai, you can't even see down to the street because of the pollution. And it's not because of the cars. It's just a lot of people and a lot of space with no landscaping, nothing to absorb pollution that is in the air. I've heard it said that people like living in high-rise density dwellings spend their time in cafes and restaurants and spend their money, and that's good for the community. Well, you know what I like to spend my free time in? Growing my own organic food in the garden. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Charles Hagnon, and then B.J. Krupp.
Hi there.
Good morning.
About 6 months ago, a bunch of people presented some information that indicated that the United States has already achieved 1990 levels in greenhouse gas production, which is one of the principal goals of this plan. And having achieved that, it calls into question the entire legitimacy of why we're doing this. If we're trying to get to 1990, and 6 months ago the United States reached 1990, something is really off if we're continuing to barrel forward with this plan. The basic story is that, you know, the ICLEI vision that we're trying to get stuffed with is a 19th century vision, a mechanistic vision. It's rail and restrictions. The idea is to squash people sufficiently so that their lives are shrunk and they emit less gas or use less things. But what's happening is that the 21st century is squeaking out, and there's innovation going along, and the innovation is obsolescing all the mechanistic approaches that are intrinsic to this plan. The natural gas revolution, the 54 mile per hour car standards, the natural gas fueling systems, the automated vehicle spacing systems, all these things are cheap, digital, and available, but yet we're stuck on this horrific, draconian plan. Not only is this plan sort of misguided and wasteful, but it's actually harmful. The United States is currently reeling because the government distorted real estate markets. And you've got a 25-year plan to distort real estate markets. It turns out, according to Randall O'Toole of Cato, that all of the damage that's been done in the real estate markets took place where there was regional land use planning. You have a complete dichotomy. The places where you had the masterminds trying to fix things and ossify things had a boom and bust cycle and were very, very destructive. The places where people were left alone, there was no boom and bust cycle and people were, you know, there was prosperity and ease. And I asked you, I said, why are we doing this again? You know, it's the central fact of our life. It's the worst recession since the Great Depression, and here we're doing all the things that we know don't work. So I ask you to stop doing this, reconsider it, and try and think of something that's more reflective of some of the free approaches and trusting the citizenry that we've all come to know. In a sense, it's like I'd really like my life to stop being dominated by ICLEI thought and have it start being dominated by California thought.
Yeah, thank you, BJ. And after BJ is Paul Maganetti.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the fact that I did attend a visioning session with I don't know, your facilitators. And I found it very interesting because I was in the public health discussion, and they had presented all these great numbers and how we're going to lower the medical costs, et cetera. So when I asked, actually, she's right there. I asked that lovely lady with the long hair what the study was, where it was done, what the background of it was. I wanted the statistics. I wanted to see the study, where I could find it. She just repeated the same three sentences that were listed in the discussion deal. Now, if you can't present us with people that are better qualified, it tells me that the information you are getting is lousy, and you're making coming to a consensus on what you're going to do. Now, you are supposedly elected officials who are supposed to have the capacity to really be study the issue carefully and be informed and spend the money carefully. We've seen nothing but rampant misspending in our government, and I think it's time that you sit down and take a look. I don't like going to these visioning sessions and not getting the answers, like the sample size. That's simple in statistics, okay? So let's have your people come with real answers. The studies, tell us where we can find it. The little bit I found was done by a few public health people, and really, truly, was just generalities. It didn't have any real facts. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Paul? And after Paul is Peter Singleton, I believe.
My name is Paul Maginetti. I'm on the board of the Greater East San Carlos Neighborhood Association. I'm not going to talk about why this is a bad idea in theory. I have a real-life situation here where they're trying to build San Carlos Transit Village, which we've discovered is really just a housing project shoehorned between El Camino and the train tracks. It's a housing project to us. We've been dealing with a developer who feels entitled to ignore our concerns and dismisses us at every turn, with Samtrans, who they seem intent on becoming a real estate empire, and a city staff that feels they're entitled to undermine our efforts to have our needs heard and met. This is a result of feeling entitled by this plan, by Grand Boulevard Initiative, the One Bay Area, and it affects real people. Our lives have meaning too. Re-engineering our society is not required. What you need to do is improve transportation, stick to that, stay out of housing.
Okay, thank you. Peter Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have four. I want to raise four assumptions that are underlying this, the Plan Bay Area, that I think undermine the plan that you're developing, and need to be addressed before it becomes a valid plan that you can certify through the EIR process or through the political process. But first, I wanted to mention, as a fellow citizen, to please consider that the citizens that know about this do not like the plan, and the citizens do not like the plan are the people whose interests you serve. And I urge you to consider that. I went to a meeting in May where the ABAG board and the MTC commissioners listened to citizen after citizen after citizen, articulately and persuasively expressing opposition to the plan, and it made no difference. Another thing that gravely concerns me before I go to those four forecasts is the assumption that the public must be persuaded to agree to this plan rather than the public should be consulted and maybe the plan should be changed. Last month, November 9th, this body deliberated, talked about the public visioning sessions earlier this year, and Mr. Sparing and Mr. Haggerty and Mr. Heminger laughed about how painful it had been to sit through the visioning sessions earlier this year. Painful was the word that you used several times. We're the people whose interests you represent. It shouldn't be painful for you. You should listen to us. Okay, four assumptions that discredit this and invalidate this plan. The first is that ABAG and MTC are using assumptions for population growth which are wildly overstated. almost 10% a year per decade for the next three decades. The California Department of Finance in May of 2012 came out with a revised set of forecasts that were just over 5% for growth in population for the Bay Area. I think even those are overstated and will be revised down. That is a built-in bias for more and more growth in housing, which is false. It's invalid. Second is your models assume that greater density equals decreased greenhouse gas emissions per capita. The empirical data shows exactly the opposite. Greater density equals greater greenhouse gas emissions per capita. That needs to be addressed. Third, your models assume that there is a vast unmet need for and demand, market demand, for mixed-use commercial space and mixed-use residential. The empirical data falsifies that. There are mixed-use developments built with redevelopment agency funds throughout the Bay Area that are sitting largely or completely empty. My time's finished. Thank you very much.
No, go, if you have a final thought.
The fifth driving assumption is this body was assigned by the state initially 5% decrease in greenhouse gas emissions per capita. This body, in a surfeit of enthusiasm, went back to the state and demanded that the state assign this region a 15% decrease in greenhouse gas emissions per capita. Why would you do that?
That's a good question. I'd like to bring it back to the committees. Is there further discussion? Ellen's done a fairly good job laying it out for us. And is there any other?
I had a public comment card in.
I don't. What is your name?
Glenn Gelino.
I gave it to this young lady right here.
Okay, yeah, I had it on number six, but go ahead. You can wrap it up. And
okay, I'd like to start by saying I'm astounded that as a public meeting and commissioners as yourself that are elected officials elsewhere, we didn't start this meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I would encourage you to do that in the future. I mean, it seems to be normal protocol if you're an American in this country. The visioning sessions at the last ABAG meeting, it was stated that you found the visioning sessions to be uncomfortable. And I think what you took away from that was that you needed to change the way you're doing your visioning sessions. What you should have taken away from that is that the public, the people that are going to be affected by these plans, are not happy. And that's why it's uncomfortable for you. You have a vision of what you want to see the Bay Area. It's not the same shared vision that the people that have to live in that with your vision share. I also think that there's a conflict. There's a lot of special interest groups that have been actually funded by grant money from this body in ABAG to help facilitate some of these visioning meetings. They have their contingents show up at the meetings. They've got a seat at the table in a lot of cases, and the general public does not. With regards to the planned future visioning sessions, I respectfully request that you do this in the evening so that the majority of the people that are hardworking and paying taxes that are going to foot the bill for this have an opportunity to be heard beyond hopefully receiving a telephone interview that may have biased or slanted questions, and to give them an opportunity to speak out as to their feelings. And I urge you all, start listening to these people in the audience and listen to what we want. We're the citizens. You're supposed to be there representing our interests. Okay? So with that said, I urge you, pay attention to these people and don't just treat them as an annoyance.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Bring it back to the committee. Are there comments on the plan that Ellen has laid out? Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I just had a couple of questions. First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming today and
speaking and sharing your thoughts, and staff for the presentation. I just had a couple of things. First of all, one of the most recent comments raised some of the points that were raised, the four points, and I wondered if we could just have updated information to affirm the discussing, you know, I know we've had a lot of discussions about the population assumptions, the GHG targets, the, you know, some of that information that continues to evolve. And then I guess the other thing is, could you talk a little bit more about the phone survey and how that's going to be structured, and would it be possible to see how the questions are going to be structured?
Commissioner Wirth, we retain a pollster, and we come up with questions that we would be happy to discuss. I know for other polls, there's been a working group of commissioners who have worked with staff to make sure they're comfortable with the questions and the wording and the content. And then they go out and do their survey, and they give us a sample, you know, an acceptable margin of error, and then we usually share the results with you at a public meeting. So that's how we conduct the polls.
Great. So we'll continue to have that working group to review the questions.
Sure.
In light of
this
our
is America, we don't make life-changing decisions based on age.
Was that it? Okay. Thank you, Amy. Okay. If there's no other, there was no action today. Is this just for your information, Ellen?
It's down for your approval, just to make sure that you're comfortable with the approach.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion?
Jim, if I could.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
As we talk through these, like the list of questions, we talk about seeking people's preferences, but, you know, we're not really at a stage where we're evaluating choices and preferences. We're at a stage where we're evaluating the environmental impacts of a preferred alternative versus other alternatives. And so the questions really need to be targeted on that question. I mean, what are the impacts relative to this alternative versus that alternative? What are your concerns about this alternative versus that alternative? So that's the question we're answering, not just simply getting an answer, what's your preference. And so we've gone through that phase of evaluating alternatives and picking a preferred alternative. The next phase is to looking at the differences in environmental impacts.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Scott, Harry, Scott?
The impact will be devastating.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one thing to the staff, and I don't, maybe the chair's decision, but you know, we really should start these meetings with the pledge, and I do agree with them on that. And I thought we were doing it in honor of past Commissioner Bob Blanchard for a while, but maybe somehow we got away from that.
No, we do it at the commission meetings, but
I know,
you know,
but we should do it at
that's
the
fine.
Committees
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I do agree with that.
Yeah. That's not a problem. Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion. Go ahead.
I had one other thought, and I this thing died on me, so
will
I'm going back on. Okay, I'm pulling the mic closer. One of the things that I if I recollect correctly, when you talked about doing the public forums, you talked about starting up from 4 to 6, there would be something, and then from 6 to 8, there would be something. What I'm wondering is, it would be just staff to give some sort of consideration to maybe pushing that back to 5, maybe 5 to 7, and then 7 to 9. The reason why is most people are still working at 4, so it might be more helpful to push it back an hour, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Alan, are you going to, is each county going to have an option of having a little bit later time, or
sure, we would want to schedule it around your availability and what's convenient for the public.
Because in my case, I would prefer it in the evening, and so I think you need to.
Yeah. Motion,
yeah, that's fine.
And then I'll move that.
With the ability if you make it a little bit later, you can.
Sure.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Any dissent to that motion? Okay. All right, Alan. You've got your marching orders.
Excuse me.
Let's move on to item number four.
Mr. Chair, did we need to do that as a bag committee as well?
Oh, I assumed we did both, but go ahead.
So I'll ask the same question. Do we have a motion from an ABAG? We got a Motion,
Dave
and...
Yes, same motion.
Same motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And let's move on back to item number four. This is the one barrier.
And Mary, committee members, I'll just note very quickly that Appendix B is correct and updated. Appendix A that was included in your packets, somehow the corrected, updated current version was not included, so refer to Appendix B if you're looking at the attachments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Mary?
Medium Chun with the Association of Bay Area Government. This item focuses on the deadline extension for the certification of housing elements. As you know, the One Bay Area grant pursues a better alignment of land use, transportation, and housing, and towards that, there is one specific requirement, certification of the housing element by the state, by HCD. And each local jurisdiction under this requirement will have to have a certified housing element by January 31st, 2013. This is a requirement that has triggered a lot of action in the region, and as you can see, and as Ken indicated, Attachment B is the most recent table. The Attachment A was with the table that we presented you earlier. So in Attachment B, you see that 19 jurisdictions do not have a certified housing element. Out of those, 17 have requested an extension, and the extension is for a year. That means that they can still apply for projects under the One Bay Area grant, but the access to funding will be pending the certification by January 31st, 2014. Out of those 19 local jurisdictions that do not have a certified housing element, 8 will probably complete the certification before January 31st, which means that not all of them will need the extension, but they requested the extension just in case. In several other cases, the cities have received have already submitted a draft, and it's under review at HCD. And there are most of them expect to complete the full certification by June, so they won't need the full year extension, but that's what they plan in based on their conversations with HCD. Regional agencies have been working with local jurisdictions to support them in the completion of their housing elements. We have also met with HCD. A couple of weeks ago, we had a conference, or the planning directors, the Bay Area Association of Planning Directors, had a conference on housing where HCD and local jurisdictions engaged in a dialogue about what needed to be done. And in a way, this kind of moves us to the next cycle. As you know, the next cycle will be an 8-year period, but jurisdictions that do not complete the housing element within the 120 days of the deadline will have to do a housing element in a 4-year period. So there are more strict consequences if local jurisdictions do not complete the housing element. Again, we're asking here for your approval. This is an extension for local jurisdictions to complete the certification of the housing elements by January 31st, 2014.
Okay. Bill Don?
Bill? Yeah, I don't know that it really applies here, but I just wanted to get it on the record. I know our senior staff understands what's going on here, but in Napa County, we have a lawsuit, and we've won the lawsuit on the housing certification. It's going up the appeal is being ruled on as we speak, and we just want to make sure that, look at communities that are counties or cities that stand up to HCD and say, wait a second, we do believe we have a certified housing element. We've complied with all the rules and regulations, and just because somebody has discretion in Sacramento and decides in their infinite wisdom that, we haven't done the job right, but if a court rules that we have done the job right, this body here should recognize that. And like I said, I don't know that fits into this particular motion, but I did want to have that as a discussion point to let the commission and the planning body for ABAG understand what's going on in one of the counties.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Marion, do you have a response to that? I mean,
we have met with the County of Napa and discussed the specifics. We discussed the various options for how to, when to consider a housing element certified or approved, and after multiple discussions, given the different paths that sometimes cities have taken, we settle on the certification by HCD. We're hopeful that over the next year, the County of Napa will be able to, and HCD will be able to resolve this certification. We are facilitating a dialogue, but if that were not to happen, we agreed that we'll revisit the issue before the end of the next deadline. So for this approval, this is just allowing an extension for a year.
No, I understand. But to Bill's question, do we have the authority to approve this?
We are not. We are relying on HCD to certify the housing element. So that's
you say rely. I mean, does the law require us to use HCD's certification?
Well, for the approval of the housing elements, HCD certification is what we're using for this process, but it's up to this body to choose an alternative.
Okay, that was my question. That's what, okay. Yes, Jake?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jake McKenzie, representing Sonoma County and the nine cities of Sonoma County. The question is a direct one. Have you had discussions with the city of Cotati?
They approved the housing element at the city council 2 days ago, so it's going for certification in the next few days.
Okay, so now it's just that you don't have any estimate of how long it'll take HCD to take action on that housing element.
Correct, but it has been approved, so what they are going is through the formal process. The certification can only come after the city council has approved the final.
I understand that. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, other questions?
No complete street, no roundabouts.
Public and comments, Heather Gass. Heather?
Part of the criteria.
Heather, did you want to comment on this item?
On what?
On this item? You have a card in, that's why.
Oh, well, I had a card in for public comment at the end, but that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, it had number 6 written on it, but I'll call you at public comments. Thank you. Thank you, Heather. Leonard Holmes. Well, Leonard, did you want to speak on this item? Okay. Leslie Lawrence?
I give my time to Heather Goss.
Okay. And how about, is it Lapidus?
I give my time to Heather Goss.
Okay.
I might as well speak then.
Heather, do you want to speak on this item or public comments?
Well, I object to all of it, so I might as well speak.
Okay.
You know, the housing element, I think, is completely flawed. ABAG has agreed that it's flawed. The cities have opposed it. The people are opposing it. Yet we're still going forward with these allocations. And the 175% redistribution model, which I don't believe is in the statute. So this is a problem. But, you know, all of this is, we've been told for the past few years that all of this is a grassroots thing, that the cities are coming to ABAG and they want this, that they're the ones that are pushing for this entire agenda for high-density housing at the grassroots level. But, you know, the history shows that this is not true. In 1987, sustainable development was coined by the Brundtland Commission to describe what we're doing here, which is smart growth, et cetera. In 1990, ICLEI was founded, and ABAG has joined ICLEI. And ICLEI is an international organization, an NGO, authorized by the United Nations. I have a 1997 tax return by ICLEI, which clearly states their local Agenda 21 campaign and how much they spent on local Agenda 21. We've been laughed at and ridiculed as individuals coming to these meetings, but yet I find that on the ABAG website, ABAG joined the Compact for a Sustainable Bay Area in 1997, the Bay Area Alliance for Sustainable Communities. And in this compact, it clearly states, and this is your document, not mine, that It was a multi-stakeholder coalition established in 1997, founded on the principles of the three E's of sustainable development. The Bay Area Alliance adopted the United Nations World Commission on Environment and Development. In 1996, Richard Clark, the CEO of Pacific Gas and Electric, Michelle Perrault from the Sierra Club, both members of the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which was created by President Clinton in 1993 after the signing on of President Bush in 1992 of the Rio Earth Summit. They came to your organization and presented the idea of regional sustainable development, that initiative, to the General Assembly of ABAG. This is in 1996. In order to ensure that all three E's in government were represented, Carl Anthony from Urban Habitat representing equity, Charlotte Powers of ABAG representing government, Sunny McPeak representing business, and Richard Clark representing economy, and Michelle Perrault representing the environment were all there. So the idea that this is just, you know, some bottom-up grassroots effort is just not true. This has been going on before the legislation. SB 375 was in 2008. AB 32 was in 2006. The Bay Area Alliance also, and this is also in your document of a compact for sustainable Bay Area, states that it is also, that the Bay Area Alliance also operates within an international context, and that the Earth Charter Initiative is an outgrowth of the 1992 summit in Rio de Janeiro and has many principles similar to the vision and commitments contained in this compact. It also states that in 1999, the Bay Area region and the Bay Area Alliance were selected as one of four regional pilots in the nation by the Partnership for Regional Livability and a consortium of major foundations and federal agencies dedicated to advancing sustainable development and smart growth. This is all in your document. This was prior to legislation. So when you tell us that this is not you, that we should go talk to our legislators in Sacramento, it appears to me, and based on your information, that this body was forming these opinions and pushing for this legislation prior to its enactment in 2006 and 2008.
I just want to point out that this group is also part of the ICLEI charter. Heather, hang on one second. The reason I'm giving her a little extra time is that she's speaking for five other cards, and so I'm going to give her.
I'm almost done.
One more minute.
Do our rules allow that?
Yes, the chairman.
We just went over how
the public input process is all about suppression of the public input. And here,
Heather, speak to the item.
I'm almost done. So I also want to present the ICLEI Charter. It's also known as the ICLEI Constitution, which ABAG is a member of. It was founded in 1990. And it clearly states it was established as an international local government association. It has the 16 principles of the Earth Charter. It states that the association shall serve as an international representative for its members and program participants by providing advocacy between national and international governments, agencies, and organizations. My point is that you're in violation of Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, which clearly states you cannot form a compact, alliance, or a treaty. And this organization is doing just that. And for the past 2 years, we have been showing up and we have been told that this agency is only doing this because the legislature is mandating it. And this clearly is not the case.
Okay. Thank you.
You're in violation and you are violating your...
Okay. Heather, thank you. You've made your point. So, I'd like to bring back to the committee to entertain a motion for the deadline extension for the request for the general plan housing element. We have a motion and a second. MTC Planning Committee, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Mark,
I'll
if you would,
take
please.
It for ABAG. I did want to add a couple comments and thank my fellow supervisor Dodd for raising this issue. We would really request, I believe it's MTC that needs to act to create some sort of appeal process when there's a difference of opinion between HCD and what our courts have decided. Somehow HCD feels they're more intelligent than the judges who decide whether we're consistent with state law. And that seems to be where we're at. Maybe they're changing their mind, but if we run into a roadblock, we need a place to go. because you're talking about significant amount of funding, and it really shouldn't be left up to an appointed body to make those decisions. So I really ask that MTC take that up. With regard to ICLEI, I in our own climate action plan, we find that we do use ICLEI as a professional source as to how accounting is done, and you probably do as well, so you should pay special attention to that. ICLEI's accounting processes don't have public policy necessarily in their horizon, or perhaps they do, but they're not always consistent with our local priority. And specifically, with the aspect of agriculture, which, of course, Napa County has a particular interest in, under an ICLEI accounting mechanism, you'll get carbon credits for growing corn if it's used as automotive fuel, but you won't get carbon credits if it's grown for food. And that's from a societal level where our real issue is trying to feed the world's population in a changing global climate. That seems very inconsistent with public policy. So I just raise that because I think we should be aware of what we're accounting, and really ultimately the question is society benefiting by what we're doing? It shouldn't be simply a pure accounting mechanism. We really have to ask that. And I think we do that, and I think that's part of what's rolled into how we're approaching our planning. But I do just, you know, ICLEI provides technical input, but we need to question that as policymakers in terms of, is this really meeting our policy? And I just encourage you all to do the same. With that, I'll entertain a motion to mimic what has already been done by MTC. A motion. Do we have a second? All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay. Public comment? I'm sorry. I did see your card somewhere, Parisha. It's in here. It's in here. I saw it. I apologize. No. Go ahead. I'll just include this in public comments, so go ahead.
Okay, it is specifically on the housing element item of the agenda, so
it says it's... Okay. Good morning. My name is Parisa Fatehi Weeks. I'm a staff attorney at Public Advocates. Wanted to take a quick moment to commend you for making this requirement of a HCD-approved housing element as a condition of this funding, which is a voluntary source of funding that cities can pursue. The condition has added leverage to this important requirement of state law and helped ensure cities do the advanced planning they need to do to meet the region's housing needs. And really, I had a question. I think it's probably for staff about, because funds will be held in reserve for jurisdictions that have not yet complied but are working on complying. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit more about what happens to the funding in reserve. Will there be a backup designation of a jurisdiction or a project in the case that a jurisdiction isn't able to come into compliance so that that money isn't gone to nothing?
Marion, I'm going to take all the public comments and you can respond. James Bennett, James? And how about Glenn Gillenew?
First of all, I'd like to say thank you and to Mr. Haggerty's alternate, I believe. I appreciate your comments recognizing the need to say the pledge at a public meeting. I'm quite disappointed that when the crowd decided to start saying the pledge, none of you bothered to stand and say the pledge. It's very telling. As we move forward with your visioning sessions, again, I would implore you to facilitate the comments of the public and to heed some of those comments. And through the chair, I'm sorry if this member in the corner, Mr. Weiner over here, finds it being ridiculed when somebody says that you're in violation of our federal constitution. That's been a founding document that has served us well for 200 plus years. And I think you all, at some point, took an oath to uphold that constitution. That was the first order of business when you took office. And I urge you all to live up to your oath. You made it. If you didn't intend to keep it, you shouldn't have put your hand up and pledged that you would. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Okay, that's the end of the public testimony. If there's no other business, so if there's no other business, the meeting is adjourned.
You didn't call my name while I was doing that.
I guess he would. I guess you guys would do a lot of things outside what we were taught in civics class. You know,
since the hour is getting so late, maybe I'll just speak a little bit of truth that speaks to the big picture. It wasn't in civics class.